This is Julie Guerrero, and you're listening to Cut to the Chase.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Cut to the Chase. This is your host, Gregory Proctor. Today, we will feature episode 74, entitled, I Write, I Chalk, and I Take Pictures. And so, yes, I know people, you guys tell me every single day in your comments, Greg, what do you come up with these titles? I've just never heard of these things. They're just, sometimes they are just so different. They're intriguing. They're mysterious. You know, they have this own authenticity about it. Well, I'm going to tell you today, the story today is something that's going to be so real. It's going to be so enlightening. It's going to take us away from all of the thought leader talk that we've got going on, all of the different, you know, things that we have to do to worry about our mindset, all of the craziness that's going on in the world today. And this is going to bring us back to our childhood. It's going to help us all realize the premises and the notions of what fun is all about. And our featured guest today is someone that came by way of a recommendation, and I appreciate that recommendation, and I certainly hope that that recommending person will get an opportunity to listen to this podcast and realize how much fun she missed out on. But without further ado, what I'm going to do is I'm going to open up with a quote, and I found just the perfect quote to go with the episode title today, which is entitled, I Write, I Chalk, I Take Pictures. It says, life is like a camera. Just focus on what's important. Capture the good times. Develop from the negatives. And if things don't work out, take another shot, people. I mean, let's be realistic. You know, we're in some interesting times right now, and sometimes we just have to take that quote for face value. And so today, I'm going to introduce our featured guest, who has a range of interesting hobbies. She loves arts. She loves color lines. She loves the perspectives of relationships and creating basically art. She has a medium, which is basically photography, writing, and chalking, which basically has become her second love. It has really been a medium that has allowed for her to fully express herself and connect with others. And I know everybody's going, huh? What? What are you talking about, Greg? But let me just put this all into perspective. Today, our featured guest is a human resources professional, trained and a lifetime student of history, music, and art. Her passion for social justice and the purpose are a common thread when she talks to people and select her projects. Her clients and community partners describe her work as style, creativity, personable, and authentic. She appreciates the discipline of proper planning as well as the space needed to innovate. She has over 15 years in a professional experience that spans across international, national, state, local, organizations, and since 2004, she worked as a community organization for the Empire State Building Pride Agenda, a New York State lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender LGBT nonprofit advocate organization. In 2006, she began a career in HR, where she has led national education nonprofit Teach for America. The bulk of her HR career was with UNICEF, the New York headquarters, where she held a wide variety of supporting roles in international staff country offices around the globe. She specializes in supporting emergency duty stations, such as in the Middle East, North America, Western Hemisphere, Central America, Eastern and South Africa regions, and working on various HR systems and projects throughout the course. She's built upon her career as an HR professional, combining her passion and technology. For now, she works with HR software, supporting U.S.-based HR professionals. She is thrilled to be learning new skills and expanding her HR toolbox. She lives in New York with her wife, Karen, and she's attended Mount Holyoke College and holds a bachelor's degree in American history from New School University. She writes daily and enjoys photography and running and hiking and playing the piano and listening to music from the 80s and 90s. And during her time at home, she's discovered new hobbies, which includes sidewalk chalking, hammocking, and gardening. And without further ado, I don't know if I did a great job or not, I'd like to introduce to our listeners Miss Julie Guerrero.
Wow. First of all, thank you so much, Gregory. While you were talking just from the beginning, it was emotional for me to hear you say all those words. I couldn't help but reflect, on the journey that I've been on. I did start as a writer and photography, actually. It's interesting that you chose a quote that talked about photography, because that actually is my first medium of choice. I took my first black and white photography class at a community college, and I caught the bug. And there's definitely something about film. It's such a different medium. It's slower. And actually, as I think about that, that's maybe the reason why I was attracted so much to chalking. Mm-hmm. When I was in the dark room, similarly to now, I would lose time. I would forget, how long I've been in the dark room, or I'd work on a print for hours, and you can't see me, but I'm smiling because I just remember the dark room and creating and loving that whole process. But as you were talking and as you ran through the professional, the professional stuff, there is a full spectrum there. You mentioned chalking being my second love, and my first love really is people and connecting mm-hmm. with people. Mm-hmm. And during this pandemic, right away, I live in Brooklyn, and right away I knew that life would be different. And I'm extroverted, and I missed so much being with people, being on the subway. Mm-hmm. I'm a New Yorker. I don't always talk to people on the subway, but at least there is that opportunity. If I do want to have a chat, I can pick from like 100 people. I miss those, times and that connection. And, that's really what led me out on my sidewalk. I needed a way to, first and foremost, express myself and what was going on. But I quickly realized that other people appreciated that connection too. As I was chalking, my neighbors, who frankly I didn't really talk to since this past year, we're always going, from point A to point B. I'd never really talked to my neighbors significantly other than a hello, how are you? That's it. Or thanks for bringing my garbage can. And then, as I was talking this past year, people stopped and we talked, and it was amazing. It is just amazing, to find new ways to connect, which I said is my very first love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we certainly appreciate you sharing that backstory with us and really expressing the significance of how important the connectivity is and where your first median stands, you know, and that's really connecting with others. And we find that that overall is significantly important, not only now, but it has been. And it's something that, you know, for many, many months, I've pondered over the question of asking myself as well as others. And it starts out with, where are we? Because we have gone from being such a socialistic society and having to be a part of others' lives, whether it's directly or indirectly, to having that just be ravaged by the notion of a pandemic. And now it's just hard to even have just a very simplistic means of connection, a means of looking at someone in the eyes and understanding whether or not they're genuinely being truthful with you as they speak and share their story. You know, so all of those things, you know, as I consider where we are today, we can't take those things for granted if we ever get back to a point to where there is a way to connect on a physical type of means. And certainly I can relate because, you know, as we've shared and discussed and talked, you know, before conducting this podcast, you know, a part of what I wanted to do was to be able to, you know, bring forth something that allowed for people to connect. And it's not trying to bring forth celebrities or bring forth, you know, famous people. It's like, let's bring forth everyday people that have stories that they want to share and be genuine about it so that it's relatable for everyone and not just one-sided. And so certainly, Julie, we certainly appreciate you sharing that with us. So as we jump into all of the many facets of things that have made you such a vibrant professional and very genuine in the way that you have really reached out and helped your community, let's kind of talk through, I guess my first question is what has brought you forward with the attraction to writing, and when did you start to write?
I started writing probably, I think, before my teens. I was someone who kept a journal every year, so I would probably point it towards maybe fifth grade or sixth grade, and the writing was journal writing. I continued that through my late to early teens. I also was a avid letter writer. I was that kid who did pass notes and folded up into triangles. I love that. And I also did mail quite a bit of letters. I've been a journal writer for a while, but it was really at Mount Holyoke where I learned. It's a small all-women's college in Western Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was immersed in reading and writing. So like mm-hmm. part of writing is being a reader as well. And at Mount Holyoke, that's pretty much all I did was read and write. And I had a number of professors who would rip my writing apart. But that's really how I learned. They would redline it all over the place, and they really taught me how to think critically. And one of my professors was Beverly Tatum, who is the president of Spelman College, and she was trained in psychology, and she did a lot of classes in psychology education as well as social justice, and that's my first year of college was when I first wrote about my racial identity, my sexual orientation, my family history. So, you know, they really challenge you to think critically about yourself. And through writing, right, you learn, you cultivate this, I think, the self-awareness that has always been, pretty close to my heart. So.
Right. Right. And that's extremely important because, so many times, as I look out and seeing what's being cast out there in society and of course, out in the world, whether it's social media or television or whatever type of platform people indulge into their brain numbing entertainment. I find that there's a lot of personas of this is what, they want you to see, but it's not necessarily what is really going on behind maybe door number one. And, a lot of times people thrive to try and ensure that they envision this world of fantasy, but in most cases that fantasy is not necessarily relevant. It's not necessarily real. And so it's insightful to see that as you were going through school and really honing in on your craft, is that you were really challenged to kind of fully express yourself in a manner that really drove the critical thinking. Because in a lot of cases, it's talked about a lot in today's current, environment. But it's sometimes very seldomly used because people are always referring themselves or wanting themselves to have a quick way to the top. In other words, let's not do the hard work. Let's not go through the process. Let's not go through the journey in order to be able to get there so that we can appreciate it. They just want to get there. And that's not always the best method, to try to achieve any level of success in life. And so as you were going through school, as you stated earlier, you were expressing yourself and kind of opening up your horizons with regards to the LGBT and your writing. At what point did photography play into the mix of your journey?
I laugh because we've talked a lot about writing. And in my early 20s, I did go through, for all intents and purposes, a writer's block, where I did stop writing. But that just because you stop writing doesn't mean you stop feeling. And the feelings have to go somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. So I was fortunate enough to be able to enroll in a photography class. And at that point, and still, right, when I can't find the words, I turn to art. And photography is what I found to express not just what was in my mind, but also in my heart. At that time I was certainly feeling a lot. I think it was in the early 2000s, so it was, it crossed the threshold of pre 9/11 and then post 9/11. There's a lot of things going on. And at this time digital didn't explode yet. So, at this time art or photography was very much like, not that digital is not an art, but everything was slower and you're sort of forced to be introspective when you're in the dark room. At least for me. So that's that. The whole process of the f-stop and the shutter speed. You have to make a picture. You don't just and you take it, but do the light and the film speed. All of this comes into play, and of course composition. When I frame a picture, I'm always thinking, and feeling, and you know, whatever I shoot when I you know click, it is an expression of what I'm thinking, seeing, or feeling, or all of the above. I mean, it could sure. also it could also just be like a picture, right? But 9 times out of 10, I did probably put some thought into that, and it's probably some layers of symbolism somewhere in there.
Right. So with all of these things going on, you know, regarding your writing and then picking up photography, and then of course you're, you know, an avid runner, avid hiker, and piano player, you know, your whole life was encompassed and embodied by the arts. And so when you decided that after school you were focusing in on what do you really want and what do you really want to do, what led you into the HR professionalism?
You know, there was a point in my career where I had to make a choice, where I considered following photography and art, and people would say, I originally thought I would be a teacher, and some people are like, why don't you just, you know, teach photography? And life isn't, I mean, some parts of life are linear like that, but in my case, it just wasn't for me. I do respect all of the artists that follow their art, and they make a living off of their art. For reasons 1, 2, and 3, that's just not something that I was able to do. So HR really found me. You know, my first job was working as a community organizer, and you know, in hindsight, there is definitely a common thread, and that's people. But the reasons why I went away from, you know, art as a profession was just practical reasons. I wanted to live independently. I wanted to be financially stable. So I landed the job as a community organizer through, I want to say Craigslist, but I don't think it was Craigslist. I saw an ad about a speaking event at City Hall. And I went there as a volunteer. I took pictures. I met someone who was a community organizer. His name is Chris. And we exchanged contact info. That led to another conversation. And I later volunteered for the Empire State Pride Agenda, which was disbanded actually 2015, I believe. But anyway, the volunteer job led to a full-time job. And this is the organization that was New York State's LGBT advocacy group. And at that time, marriage was just starting to bubble. It was right before George W. Bush, and the big campaign on the federal level was the federal marriage amendment. And we also worked on gender and dignity for all students. Anyway, all this to say, you know, the Empire State Pride Agenda, even though I was only there for a year, it really taught me all the fundamentals of people and connecting. It was with the Pride Agenda that I learned how to speak with elected officials. At that time, we followed the 3 C's. Clear, concise, and compelling. You know, you only have a short amount of time with elected officials, mm-hmm. so you know you have to be able to tell your story. Mm-hmm. So that was a significant period of my life, or a significant life lesson. I moved after that into another nonprofit. Again, the objective is to be financially stable. And that next nonprofit was Teach for America, that's ultimately where I found sort of my niche with human resources. Because I have so many interests, human resources made sense because, first of all, it deals with people, and there were so many functionalities that, you know, that I would later learn. There's so many avenues in human resources. It was a good fit for me, for someone like me who has a lot of interests.
Right. Well, Seth, certainly appreciate you, providing a little bit more insight, towards all of the different transformations that really ties your life together, kind of in the notion of artistry, because of the simple fact that all of these different variations of I write, I chalk, I take pictures, really, they make up the composition of who you are. But even though you enjoy all of those things, along with connecting people, your ability here in June of 2020 to gather a core group of friends and launch a nonprofit called the Give Back Experience, you know, that really shows your ability to be able to reach out, you know, into the community and provide some compassion and empathy. Can you share a little bit with our listeners about that?
Absolutely. So thank you for asking me about this. It's obviously also a significant part of my heart. And you know, you mentioned June, and it was really June 2nd, that first week after Memorial Day. The murder of George Floyd really was when my chalk drawing changed, actually. I was in deep pain. And obviously with the pandemic already, right, you're feeling a lot and you're sort of uprooted already. So when this event happened and all of the upheaval and I'm out there on my sidewalk, chalking my feelings out, it was clear to me that first week of June and the subsequent weeks after that, that what I was doing, although I was fulfilling the need to connect, I had this deep longing to do more. It really was, you know, sometimes I do use the word call, you know, I was called to action is what a lot of people say. My minister is always talking about, you know, this is a call to action. And that is definitely, it is something that I felt in June. I needed to do more. And I thought about what I wanted to do. And there's three spheres that I'm interested in. And if I had to lump all my varied interests together, it would be art, education, and sport. So those three things make up Julie, and they're large enough where you can kind of fit all my various, you know, human Lego pieces. I have this great group of friends from my hometown in Spring Valley, New York. And I got in touch with them and they all know, you know, how much I feel. And a lot of them, like from the get-go, supported my desire to give back. And I thought about our hometown, which is where my passion for art and education and sport took root. And I knew that that would be the first community that I wanted to direct our resources to. My theory was, or is, that there is something about, you know, the time that we grew up in Spring Valley. It's a multiracial, multi-ethnic, very diverse community. And everyone, you know, especially at that time, was talking so much about multiculturalism and diversity and white fragility and all that stuff. And everyone was trying to read up on race all of a sudden. and trying to read up on this. And I knew in my mind, like, that's not how it works, right? You can't just read a book about race and then all of a sudden everything's fine.
Right.
And my theory was, I have a great group of friends who, you know, not to idealize it, right? But we did live in a time where we lived anti-racism by being mm-hmm. around each other. We lived diversity. And a lot of us still keep in touch. And a lot of us, you know, we're spread out across the country. We are in our 40s now. We have young families. I know that I'm not the only one who wants to do more. Mm-hmm. And the response was awesome. You know, people who I haven't talked to in years saw that I was posting left and right on Facebook about this idea. And they just wanted to help. So, you know, we're still in the early stages of forming. But, you know, in the first 6 months, I was able to, you know, gain a lot of support. And then on Giving Tuesday, I launched the first startup campaign, and we reached our goal of raising $10,000. Actually, we raised $12,000. But, you know, this is a new nonprofit, and I want to do things strategically and smart and very intentionally. And again, the idea is just wanting to do more and following that just first inkling, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and just doing it.
So how do people engage with the give back experience? I mean, what contact information can you share at this moment where people can provide donations to help the give back experience?
Yeah, so our website is thegiveback experience.org, and we're also on Facebook and Instagram at the mm-hmm. Give Back Experience.
Okay. Well, certainly, thank you for sharing that. You know, I think you have just an incredible passion for basically leaving a spark wherever you go. You're the type of person that I see that can be the reason for someone to smile today. I mean, your artistic background, your resiliency and persistence in wanting to be a part of connecting with people, your professional experience, and, you know, whether it be locally, domestically, or internationally, speaks for itself, and it's very, very highly commendable. I've personally seen some of your photography work. You know, the one question that I do have, since I saw that you were a runner, is, you know, have you ever run the New York City Marathon?
Oh, that's on my list. I have not run it yet, but, you know, I've only hit a half marathon, Gregory. So, but it's definitely a goal of mine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, back in my heyday, I was a 2:45 marathoner. I'm, of course, probably about 10 years or maybe 12 years older than you now. I have no idea if I could even complete a marathon, let alone a half marathon, probably not even a 5K at this point because I haven't trained in so long. But anyway, you know, I just thought that was there's always things relatable. You know, I mean, there's so many things when you talk about connecting with people, you find synergy in just some of the weirdest places, you know, just by reading and having discussions and talking and so forth and so on. And, you know, there's just so many things that, we were doing research on you and when your bio came across that really just resonated. You know, my daughter is heavily into photography, and she's a very, very good photographer, that has a small company called, McConkie. I think I pronounced that right. McConkie. I can't remember exactly. Media, out of, Richmond, Virginia. Of course, I enjoy, you know, back in the heyday, running and so forth and so on. On my mom's side of the family, they were all musically inclined and they all played the piano. So, I mean, and then of course, my wife and you could probably talk all day for music of the 80s and the 90s, which, you know, it's like I said, when we start looking at us as people, and that's why for me, it was such an honor to want to have, you know, this dialogue with you. When we look at each other as people, you know, regardless if we know each other or we come by recommendation or we just having a genuine conversation, and we let our barriers down. And when we let those barriers down, we find out that there's just so much commonality between, you know, men, women, black, white, blue, green, whatever the case may be. And I know social justice is very, very important for you. I mean, I've seen some of your work out there and things that you've talked about. And, you know, I certainly appreciate what you're doing out there as being a voice of awareness and ensuring that people, you know, really level up on what they consider to be a part of, you know, social injustice and not just be oblivious to it. But certainly, you know, back to my point is, you know, at the end of the day, we're all cut from the same cloth. You know, I mean, it just requires us to, like you said earlier, you know, think critically and have empathy and compassion and just common decency, you know. As you mentioned earlier, your story about the neighbor, you know, how many people, you know, listening to my podcast or listen to any podcast or for that matter, how many people actually even know their neighbor? You know, have you knocked on a door and say, hello, I'm your neighbor, you know, or do you just pass them by? I mean, when are we beginning to get ourselves back into a society of being able to really consider that we have human dignity about who we are as mankind? And I think we still have a long ways to go. And I personally, from the bottom of my heart, believe that some of the great things that you're doing with your life and some of the things that you've talked about, how personable they are with you, the way you've taken action and how you express that to the world is just the start of many, many great things to come. And so, Julie, we're almost out of time. Do you have any final remarks before we wrap up?
My final remarks, you know, if I can see the people listening, and if I can connect with you for this moment, my final message is, you know, whatever you're going through, know that you're not alone, first of all, and keep going. You got to keep mm-hmm. going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly thank you for that. And, you know, I was kind of looking around my studio here in the Yogi Bear and Boo Boo studio when you were saying that, because my final quote to this was, it's never too late to be what you might have to be. And, you know, quite inspiring that your final message was right in line with my quote.
That's awesome.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, this has been a true honor. Certainly, I am going to reach out to Heather personally and say, hey, you missed out. But I'm sure you're going to talk to her as well. And Julie, thank you. Thank you very, very much. And to our listeners, we hope that through this dialogue and this discussion with episode 74, I Write, I Chalk, I Take Pictures, is that you find your true passion, you find your purpose in life, you find your meaning that fulfills your life the way that you see fit to conclude happiness. And with that, people, thank you very much. This has been Cut to the Chase, episode 74. Be safe. Bye-bye.